Good evening and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. Darkness Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Mally Fox, and the one and only Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, kids.
People are talking about
news.
They're talking?
Yeah. People are?
What are they talking about?
Stuff. I don't know.
Stuff.
We got to talk to our program director, though, about keeping that log.
Yeah.
the way it's supposed to be.
Keeps jumping out at us.
Holy.
That's
not good.
Wow.
That ain't good at all.
So, before we get started tonight, we've got an interesting guest. I read this press release that was given to me, and I don't know how much of this I want to really say. Let me just talk about it. We've talked on the show about children's ghosts and spirits and how they freak a lot of people out.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight we're going to be talking about a child spirit from an unlikely source, something kind of different and a different take that I hadn't heard of before. I shouldn't say that, but we'll get into it. It's weird. You guys got to hear the story, and we're going to be talking to our guests, Sherry Mancuso and John Scarano in a few moments. But I had to, you know, I know you're the news guy, Tim, the supernatural news fella.
Sure.
But we had some breaking news that was brought to my attention today about one of my favorite paranormal shows.
Well, that's true. Yes, we should mention.
And I wanted to bring this up because I was bummed out. You know, there's the new show Finding Bigfoot that's on the Animal Planet,
mm-hmm.
Animal Channel. What is it, Animal Planet? Or
Animal Planet. Yep.
I watch it all the time, and I can't remember the name of the damn thing. I always think it's the Food Channel, too, is it? Or is it Food Network?
Yes, it is, yes. Oh. They combine the two on occasion.
The Animal Food Channel.
Oh, yes. Man, so, that's wrong.
Anyway, Finding Bigfoot is a new series that follows around the BFRO, the Bigfoot Research Organization, with Matt Moneymaker and Bobo and Cliff and all the rest of the cast that are out investigating claims of Bigfoot. And I've really enjoyed the show. I think it's really well done. It's, you know, it's like watching an episode of Ghost Hunters, only it's out in the Bigfoot field.
Right.
And they employ a lot of different equipment. They've had some astounding results from what they've been able to acquire while they're doing this. And I've heard some rumblings, like we always hear about any new show, right?
Exactly.
Here's the headline. Finding Bigfoot Hoax Exposed.
Ooh.
By the cast.
Not good.
No. The TV show Finding Bigfoot has a lot of critics debunking the evidence that the legendary cryptid really exists. That now includes the people who appear on the show itself. Cast members from the TV show have commented in various online forums that they are bugged by the heavy-handed editing done by producers of the series and are not happy that they seem to be putting false words in their mouths, to say nothing of using tricks to make their actual findings seemingly groundbreaking. Now, critics of this kind of documentary-style reality TV shows have pointed to programs about the paranormal which seem to build on the gullibility and limited experience of viewers. The phrase, "What the hell was that?" is becoming a catchphrase for the practice. It derives from many characters in these shows who utter the phrase as they respond to perfectly normal and easily explained phenomena caught on camera, usually through night vision, FLIR lenses, and filming ghosts or the famed Sasquatch himself. This seems to be the case in the latest example of rigged reality TV. Cast member and BFRO leader Matt Moneymaker says in response to a question about one particular scene with typically grainy footage, "The thing I ran after up the hill was a human, someone who was sneaking around us in the woods trying to watch the production in progress. I said so repeatedly and vehemently at the time for the cameras, but they edited all of that out in order to make it seem unclear what I was really chasing after. That seems to be all the proof needed. Looks like reality TV itself is the next Sasquatch. Someday everyone will try to prove it really does exist," which is pretty sad. You know, I mean, I don't know how much longer the show's going to last now that they've come out they're like six episodes into the season and their own cast is coming out and saying that it's shenanigans. So you might want to.
Can't they get into trouble with their contracts for kind of calling out the producers?
I don't know. I don't know what their contracts say. You know, I mean, there's also a line of, you know, your own credibility in the field. And at what point, when they put that in jeopardy, are you allowed to step over that line? I'm not sure. I don't know.
Now, that's the show that you and Mike were talking about on Friday night, correct?
I'm not familiar with Mike. Do you mean the superstar? Let's address him properly, Mally.
Superstar.
Yeah, superstar Mike Morse.
Or he's doing the whoop.
Yeah, we were talking about that show. So interesting stuff, but very sad that's going the way of the dodo already, because they're admitting to faked evidence and some mishandling of editing, I guess is the best way to put it. Also, we want to take a moment to mention on air the passing of Clarence Clemons from the Bruce Springsteen Band, the E Street Band, passed away over the weekend, I guess. Very sad. As you know, the show's named after Darkness on the Edge of Town, paranormal radio show named after Bruce Springsteen's album, and a big fan of the band and the big man himself, and he's going to be missed. Also, a tragedy that occurred the other day with Ryan Dunn from the TV series Jackass. You know, it's an unfortunate death, and he and I guess a production assistant from one of the other TV series passed away in a fiery car crash. They still haven't completely come out and said that alcohol was the reason, although he was flying at a pretty fast speed.
Yeah, they said 130 miles an hour.
Yeah, so I'm going to guess alcohol was involved in this.
And he tweeted some pictures of him at a bar right beforehand.
Yeah, that doesn't make it okay. Right. I mean, I guess I got to say, if you're going to go, at least you took yourself out and you didn't take out a family of five.
Very
you know?
True. Very
I
true.
Guess if that's
but
the way
still,
to go.
But still, it's sad.
So those are, you know, some of the deaths that have occurred this week horribly bad news. You know, we've got some interesting shows coming up over the next couple of days, and we're going to be having some good times. So I hope you guys keep tuning in and checking it out. We're picking up a lot of new listeners, Twittering and Facebooking and adding us left and right, and said they just found it. So they're really enjoying the show. So welcome to the Army of Darkness. Right now, though, we want to get into the show because, again, when I got this PR release from this person, the story is very intriguing. So it's hard here because I want to hook people. I'll just tell you, stick with us for the show. You're going to be amazed at the story we've got to share. Joining us this evening on the Darkness on the Edge of Town paranormal radio show, Sherry Mancuso and her life partner, John Scarano. Am I pronouncing those correctly, people?
Yes, you sure are, Dave.
All right. My Italian friends are not going to kick my ass out in the parking lot after. You guys have a pretty interesting story. Now, I've heard, you know, we've heard stories of haunted possessions. We've heard stories of children's spirits that seem to be in places, and yours comes together into a kind of a unique story. And I want to get to that in a few minutes, but I want to know a little bit about the two of you. Prior to this experience, have either one of you ever dealt with strange paranormal phenomena in your life before?
Oh, absolutely. We both have.
Yeah, I'm a medium. I'm called a physical medium, so I do tune into the dearly departed, and I find missing children, and I've worked homicides, serial killers, over 30 years, and I also do prophecy, so I do both. So, yeah, I've had lots and lots of experience, and then John and I have been working together for 15 years.
Now, you've helped work?
What I don't do, I do what he doesn't do, and then we do our thing together.
Sherry, Sherry, did you say you've helped to track serial killers?
Yes.
Really? Now, have you
even predicted serial killers? And then after I predicted them a year and a half before they actually started happening, one of the biggest was the Shawcross case in Rochester, New York. They said it was the biggest manhunt in the history of the United States at the time in the 1980s. And, I mean, I got his initials, his apartment number. I mean, that he walked with a limp on his left leg. I told my brother-in-law, who is a policeman, about, you know, Rochester having a serial killer a year and a half before it happened. Then when it happened, I was called back to work with the homicide detectives on the case. So, yeah. That was just one case.
Well, and I want to get into I want to get into the story we brought you here for tonight. But I've had so many people that have asked me questions about psychics that actually help the police, and I'd like to just pick your brain on that for a moment or two here.
Okay.
How careful do the police departments have to be in employing somebody with your ability? Because they can't just go bust into somebody's house and say, "Psychic Chris Mancuso said that you were here, and this is what happened," and you know, and put you in jail. They just can't do that. Or Sherry Mancuso, sorry about that. They can't just bust in the house because of a psychic's tip, can they?
No. And here's what happens. I was one of six in the world that started out doing homicide and serial killers, etc., missing children, missing people in the 1980s, going back to 1983, and there weren't many of us at all. And what happens is most of the police departments cannot afford to pay someone like myself. They can afford maybe a private investigator or a cadaver dog. A cadaver dog alone would cost a police department around $30,000 for one day. And they just can't afford it. So that's something that I can do, that's something that I do, and it's something that I do for free, basically. And out of it, if I want to, I get publicity. I don't choose to get publicity most of the time because then I become a victim.
Right.
I don't want...
Right, you wouldn't want them knowing you're cluing into them. Right.
To be quite honest with you. And I've been stalked over the years, and I've had a lot of near-close experiences by doing this kind of work, but I just do it, you know. But you also get credibility out of it because people are going to feel that anybody who works with the police and is documented, as I am, over the years, then this person is going to be for real.
Now, when you say you're documented, where do you mean you're documented? Through the police departments themselves or through newspaper articles and news reports?
Both. Television, articles, magazines.
See, that's what's impressive to me, Sherry, is because there's, you know, like you said, back in the 80s there weren't that many, and now every week I've got people claiming to have solved case after case after case, but I never hear about it in the news. When I Google their name and Google the police departments and I Google stories, and I don't even find the cases they're talking about, and I would think, this sounds like a pretty high-profile case. If they help bust it, shouldn't somebody be arrested? Wouldn't there be a story about this? And the biggest problem that I know a lot of the listeners of our show and shows like Coast to Coast have is all of these mediums that make these claims, but there's absolutely no paper trail to prove that they are actually doing what they're saying they're doing.
Most of them are not legitimate. That's the sad part of it. Unfortunately, the psychic hotline numbers have, you know, really kind of taken away a lot of the credibility for people like myself. As I said, there's no money in it. You
right.
know, we don't do it for money. I don't, at least. I don't do it for money. I don't do it for fame. I do it because I can do it, and out of it, I get credibility. And, of course, you know, anybody like myself who's been known for 30 years is going to do celebrities, and we're going to do lawyers and judges.
Right.
And I mean, you would be a politician. You would be amazed at who I do. And I also do corporations. So,
well, are they very careful?
Intuitive.
Are they very careful when you are asked to help on a case? And then you just mentioned a case to us. Does that put them on rocky ground then because they got the information from you and that's what they followed up on to nail that down? Could that come back in the future and they say, hey, we need to relook at this case because you're telling me that the tip came from a psychic? And
well, there's a lot of policemen, and I have to say policemen is singular because police department, let's take Rochester, New York.
Right.
Police department, and there could be two policemen, homicide detectives, who have worked with psychics before, have had good rapport with them, have had good success with them, so they're into it. And their attitude is, hey, look, if we're, like, sitting at a crossroads and we have a cold case or whatever, and we can get whatever kind of help from beyond, we don't care as long as it's legitimate and as long as it helps. They normally, and I mean 99% of the time, will not give the psychics credibility because they do not want people going around going, oh, well, a psychic solved your crime.
Right.
What do we need you for? Why don't we just go with a psychic? So, you know, there was two books written about the Shawcross murders. Do you think I was mentioned in any of them? No. When Court TV contacted me, God, three or four times, saying, Sherry, we want to, you know, profile you. I had only one police department that would go on TV face-to-face, which is what is required by Court TV. And Court TV for the psychic is the Academy Award.
Right.
Because they're highly credible. You know, they they investigate everything to a T.
Right.
And it's very, very credible. So to even be asked to be on Court TV in itself is an honor. But what you have to do is, you know, you have to get these police departments to go on the air, which most of them cannot and do not want to, and they have to sit there and they have to reenact the case, and they have to go and go through the whole thing. Most of them will not do it, and most of them do not want to do it. I found a guy in Canada, in British Columbia, from my living room in 3 days under Lake Ontario. I mean, now, you know, somebody can sit there and go, well, she could have guessed where it was. Well, Lake Ontario is pretty big.
Right.
You know, it goes from the United States to Canada. So
yeah, to pinpoint where in the
how do I never know this guy? I get his best friend's name. I get names. I mean, I get timing. I get license plates. I mean, I could go on and on. That, to me, is somebody who's credible. But there's a lot of people, because nobody checks today.
Right. There's no certification for this or ways to clear it. Let me – one more question about this, and then I promise we'll move on. When you get this information, do you get it from the victim, or are you picking up – you know, TV loves to show us as though all of a sudden the psychics are looking through the eyes of the killer, and they're seeing this happen, and they know what's going on. Does that happen for you, or are you seeing the dead coming to you and saying, my body is here, please get me out of here, you know, help find me?
You know what? It sounds really corny, but exactly what you just said is just about how it happens. The victim comes to me. The Green River Killer, I mean, I contacted the Washington Post back in the early 90s, begging them to, I said that the killer's name, the initials were G.R., and I thought, well, at the time, well, G.R., you know, it's Green River. Well, it ended up being Gary Ridgway.
Ridgway, right.
And in fact, I still have all of my original documentation that I sent to the Washington Post. But do you think that they would have taken me serious? No, they never contacted me. And so Gary Ridgway, of course, went on to murder. But the reason I got involved was because, not that I wanted to get involved in the case, I started seeing visions at night and having these nightmares of seeing these victims' faces, and I would see the wedding ring floating down in the water. I mean, I could tell you stories that, you know, of what I went through. And this was horrific for me because I don't know these people.
Right.
Never been to Washington.
Well, Sherry,
I don't know who this man is.
Let's do this, Sherry. I want to, because this is something that totally intrigues me as well, but I want to get into the case we're going to talk about tonight. And I'd love to have you come back on the show and share some more of your stories and experiences, because that's fascinating to me.
I would love to.
That somebody does that. John, I have to ask you, how screwed are you to have a woman this psychic and powerful? You don't get away with anything, do you?
No, I don't. I have to be very careful, Dave. Absolutely right. I still find it funny. I get asked that a million times.
Do you cover the head with a little tinfoil before you lie, just to put it underneath your ball cap? No, honey. I was out with the guys. We were having beers, I swear.
Yeah. No, I don't get away with much. But then you have to remember, she can't get away with much with me either.
Right. Now, give us a little bit of your background, John. You said that you've had experience as well. Are you also a psychic medium?
Yes, I am. Not to the degree that Sherry is. I'm more of an intuitive. Things come to me. Dave, I also hear. It's called clairaudience.
Mm-hmm.
We also go out on cases. We go out into the field, and we try to contact the victims there. And a lot of the ghost hunters will love this. We do get EVPs. We've gotten some, particularly on video cameras, and I'm asking in some cases out in the middle on the top of a mountain, asking this guy, it was a Jason Knapp case, Jason, please talk to me. Tell me where you're at. Your mother needs to find you, Jason. And he does speak. Unfortunately, it's unintelligible. But we get stuff like that.
Well, you know what? I'll give you this something just to keep as an aside. We have two friends that are dear to us in the show, and they're EVP specialists.
Okay.
And their names are Mark and Debbie Constantino out of Reno, Nevada. And they have an uncanny ear to hear things out of EVP that other people can't hear. And they flesh it out really well. You may want to communicate with them on this, because you guys might be able to work in tandem to help pull out some of these words.
That would be way cool.
Yeah.
Because we had a sound engineer pull it off the audio on the DVD and actually put it on CD for us. So that would be like way cool. We'll have to talk about that later.
No doubt. So you've got this ability and you've got this going on. John, how old were you when this ability kicked in?
I've had it all my life. I just didn't realize it as Sherry did. My life.
All right, so it's always been a part of you. Have you seen dead people throughout life? Have you had that, or do you just hear more?
Sometimes it's just a feeling. I just know. For example, my father died when I was very young. I didn't know him, yet he would come to me. I could feel him, and I knew it was him. But I didn't know his name. I didn't know later on, you know, thinking back. Mine's more of a feeling. Now and then I am like Sherry and I do receive images, etc. But, and then sometimes I just get a voice that just pops. It's very startling because it sounds like that person is standing right next to you talking into your ear.
Now, when
an incredible healer.
When that happens, John, Sherry, can you hear it when he gets that pop and that voice comes out?
Well, I see, and I close my eyes, and I see 24/7. I mean, I could read somebody sitting in the bathtub taking a bubble bath.
Awkward.
I mean, all I have to do is close my eyes, and I start tuning into you. You know,
keep
I don't
your
know
eyes open.
Why.
Keep your eyes open for the rest of the interview, Sherry. I'm not ready for that.
And so, I love doing cold readings over the phones and over the radio, so... You know, maybe one time we'll do a show and we'll have the listeners call in.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, we're always looking for people that'll come in and do that with us and share that on the air. Now, John, you mentioned did you mean you physically hear a pop before you hear the voice?
No, I don't hear a pop. It's just David's from nowhere.
Well, the reason I ask that is that we've found in collecting some EVPs, and Mark and Debbie will talk to you about this. There are times when they start to hear it, they've trained themselves. They can tell when an EVP is coming up on a recorder because
hear that pop. Isn't that interesting?
Right, they can hear a clicking and then a pop, like it's pushing its way through to be heard. So that's why when you brought that up, I was just curious about how that handled.
I can't say that I've experienced that. I can't say that. It's just a voice, and it's just. So real and so present. It's just, we had a girl that we were searching for in Moline, Illinois, and before we left, laying in bed the night before we'd take off, Sherry was on the phone talking with the producer. It was for the Lisa show. And I'm laying in bed, and I wear earplugs because noise drives me crazy at night. I had my earplugs in, waiting for Sherry to come back, and I heard a voice that said, "I'm back." And I said, "Okay, Sherry, well, come on, get in bed." And nothing. And I went, "Oh, here we go again." And it was, we didn't even know who it was. It was a little girl that we were going to be looking for. And then Sherry, of course, had another experience. She saw the girl and described the girl to the show. And it's really, really cool the way that we're able to go back and forth. We play off of one another. And one another's talents.
Doesn't that sound like the beginning of a sitcom? You've got one psychic who can see, the other one who can hear. It's like that Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder movie.
That's what I was just thinking of.
That'd be interesting. And we're going to get into the story that we brought them here for, folks. And we're going to do that after the break here. But I'm just curious, how did you two meet?
I was teaching. I was living in Brentwood, California at the time. And I was involved in so many different things. I was teaching, and a client of mine said, "Sherry, you've got to meet this guy, John." I said, "Okay, yeah, fine, that's great." And so she kept saying, "You got to meet this guy, John, because he's metaphysical, and not so much for John and I to be attracted to each other or anything. She just wanted me to meet him because he did a lot of things that I didn't do, but yet he did a lot of things that he did do." So. She eventually brought him to my house for one of my sessions, the classes, and he sat in it. You know, John had been in metaphysics for just about as long as I had been, if not longer. And so he was very advanced and so on and so forth. We started out in business, working together. We became friends, and then eventually our relationship progressed, and now it's been there 15 years, going on 16. So, you know, we do play off one another. The story that we're going to come back and talk about, which is Charlie, our little child ghost, it's a true story. It's an incredible story, and it did start with me, and it kind of ended with a family member of John's, and we're both going to tell that story because it is a great story, and it's a true story.
Right. Well, we're going to take our break right now. We're going to come back. Stay tuned. We've got more to tell you. And real quick, do you guys have a website that they can go check out to see you guys and learn more about you?
Yeah, it's www.sherry, C-H-E-R-I, Medium Sherry, I'm sorry, www.mediumsherry.com.
Mediumsherry.com. All right, great. We'll check that out.
Also check out our book, Cold Spring. They can click on the website, on my website. It'll lead them to our book.
Great.
We have two books we've written.
And it's on your site.
Yes.
MediumSherry.com. And
correct.
That's C-H-E-R-I for our listeners. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. We're just getting started, folks. You're going to love this story. Darkness Radio continues in moments right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Good evening. Welcome back to the show. Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio. The best for paranormal radio talk. Five nights a week, Monday through Friday, 11 p.m. till midnight. You can join myself, Dave Schrader, Mally Fox, and Tim Dennis as we stare off into the strange and unusual world around us. This evening, we're speaking with our guest, Sherry Mancuso, and you can check out her website, MediumSherry, C-H-E-R-I.com, and her life partner, John Scarano. And they have an interesting story, and we want to get into this now because this next half an hour is going to fly by. So let's start off. You've got a new home. You're decorating it. You're trying to keep it in this Victorian-style theme. And which one of you finds this portrait on eBay?
I did.
Now, was there any disclaimers with this portrait, or was it just, oh, did anybody maybe give you forewarning this could be haunted, or did that not come with it?
No. What was funny was several years ago, like you said, we were looking to, decorate our home. And I was an eBay fanatic like anybody else. And I was just really learning to use the Internet. This was in the late 90s. And I was learning through eBay. So I went up, and I was wanting to find a painting, but I wanted something authentic. I wanted something that was old, and I wanted something that had been... My son is an artist, so, and I come from a family of artists. So I wanted something that had been hand-done. And because I do psychometry, which means I pick up off of photographs, I wanted something that somebody had done by hand because it's more powerful and it has more energy. So I was searching through eBay under, paintings and charcoal drawings, and I came across this one old, dilapidated picture of this little boy, and it looked like from his outfit that he had lived in the 1800s, and he had on the short knickers and the whole thing. So, and he, was probably about 8 years old, 9 years old, and there was something, it was pretty big, it was a pretty big charcoal drawing, and I loved the story that the guy who was selling it, he was flipping houses at the time. And he had this old mansion, and I think it was like North Carolina, South Carolina, somewhere around there.
It was Atlanta.
Oh, it was Atlanta. And I knew it was the South. And anyway, he had gone in this house, and the roof was really leaking, and, it was dilapidated. And there
right.
must have been like 21 rooms in this mansion. And there had been a fire. And he was going in, and he was going to redo it. Well, the only thing that was in this whole mansion hanging on a wall was this one picture of Charlie. Well, he didn't call him Charlie. I named him. So I saw the painting, and he said that he felt so sorry for this little boy, and he said I couldn't let the...
Are you pleased? Are you guys hearing that, or am I becoming clear audience?
No, you're hearing it.
All right, good.
Okay.
I couldn't, the guy said I couldn't leave this one, the charcoal drawing on in the house. Took it home. He didn't want to clean it up. Part of the frame is burnt. So when I got it, and I paid quite a bit of money for it, actually.
Sure.
And I was really excited about the painting, the charcoal drawing. So when I got it, I couldn't believe how much energy this little, picture had. So I put it upstairs in an upstairs bedroom that nobody really sleeps in. It's a guest bedroom. And I decided I need to get him a family. So I told John, I said, I can't keep him up there alone. So I said, I need to get him some relatives and have him have a family. And John said, okay. So I proceeded to find a mother and a father. And they were all, by the way, charcoals that were done by hand, and I happened to find them all on eBay, and I happened to find them all around the same time period, and I got them a sister and the whole bit. So I started this whole family upstairs on the wall.
Okay.
And actually, it got to be kind of creepy. And one day, I went down to John, and I said, you know what Charlie does? I named him Charlie. He just seemed like a Charlie to me. So I said, you know what Charlie does when we're not here? And he goes, what? And I said, he jumps out of the picture, and he jumps around the room, and he plays in the bedroom. And I said, he doesn't yet come downstairs because, I said, he doesn't know if he should. He just stays upstairs and plays. And he's lonely. That's why I got him the family, because I knew he was lonely.
Now, John, you love this woman. You spend your life with her. Mm-hmm. She's your life partner. Does she ever say anything that you look at her and you're kind of giving her the nod like, okay, honey?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy, you're putting me on the spot, but I have to be an honest man and say yes.
All right, so was this one of those times when she's telling you how the character's jumping off the painting and running around the room?
Yeah, there may have been a little eye-rolling on my part.
Okay.
But now this is where John comes in. Now his son is visiting, who's at the time, I think, 18, 19 years old, and he comes from California to upstate New York. And, John, you take it from there.
Right. Now, we had gotten this, like, in the spring, and Sherry put the collection together, and I hung everything up, and the room is wood-paneled and these pictures, and it was just a really cool setting, very Victorian. And my son, who was probably, I don't know, he was in his early 20s at the time, came and visited, never been there before. I never said a thing about the picture. Why would I? They're in there. He thought the room was cool, and that's the room he wanted to stay. We call it the gold room. It has gold carpeting. So my son, we got in, had dinner, et cetera, et cetera. He finally went, I'm really tired. I'm going to go to bed. I went to bed, and the next morning I got up, and he was on the couch downstairs in the living room, and I went, well, what are you doing? What are you doing down here? And at first he really didn't want to tell me. I just got bad vibes upstairs, blah, 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 blah. And I went, come on, what's going on here? And finally he admitted, he says, because they call me Pop, my kids call me Pop. They go, Pop, that room's haunted. I said, what? He goes, yeah, it's that painting of that kid. I go, oh, you mean Charlie? He goes, well, yeah, whatever his name is. I said, well, what happened? He said, well, I went to bed, woke up about 3 o'clock. He looked up, I get the chills when I think about it. He looked up, and Charlie jumped out of the picture, walked to the front of his bed and said, hi, my name's Charlie, what's yours? And, of course, my son is frozen with fear, and the child started asking him questions, where'd you come from? How come you're here? The room's been empty and chattered on. My son finally put the blanket over his head and just waited.
There is a magical property about those blankets, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what keeps monsters and ghosts from being able to get through that fabric, but it must be the thread count.
I know. Of course, I was shocked.
Right.
Because Sherry had done exactly what Sherry had told me, and my son had absolutely no prior knowledge. I wouldn't have told him anyway. He's such a little chicken, he wouldn't have slept in the room to begin with.
Right.
But that was, and by the way, guys, he never slept in the room again. In fact, he would not sleep upstairs again.
Really?
And then when years had passed, and my niece, who has a child 4 years old, was visiting last summer, and John and I were there, and they slept up in the gold room. And they're getting ready for bed, and my young niece and her fiancé and her son are up in the room, and they're sitting down the chairs, getting ready for bed. And all of a sudden, and my little nephew, my great-nephew, 4 years old, was sitting on my niece's fiancé's lap. And all of a sudden, the little boy says, I am not a baby. And so my future, what do you call him?
Whatever
my,
he would be.
I don't want to mention names. My niece's fiance says, I didn't say you were a baby. And he goes, not you, him. And he points to Charlie. And all of a sudden, my He says, he told me that he called me a baby. I don't like him. And then all of a sudden, my niece, who's like 22 years old, the mother of the little boy, freaked out. And she comes running down. She grabbed her son. She comes running downstairs, and she would not sleep upstairs. And she would not sleep upstairs. Not only that, she would not come back to the house, at least at this point. And, I mean, nobody knew about Charlie. I never told my niece about Charlie because I knew she wouldn't sleep upstairs.
Right.
And I knew that she was spooked. We don't talk in my family about what I do. We never mention it. They know that I have the ability. They know I do what I do. And I've been around 30 years, and I've gone all over the world. In fact, John and I have both gone all over the world finding missing kids. And we found them, by the way. And, you know, this is just something that's very private. I don't mention to people when I meet them what I do, because not everybody's into what I do, and
right.
I could care less. You know, it's
so,
like,
yeah, here,
I do what I do, and I am who I am.
Here, so, you've got this going on. You don't tell the family about it, but yet they're having the experiences, even though you're not letting them in on the inside secret that you and John are sharing in this home.
Exactly.
Correct.
Because, you know,
well, hold on one second. Sherry, we have to take a quick break, Sherry, and we're going to come back and wrap up with this. So we've got about another 10 minutes when we come back. Hold tight. We got more stories of Charlie the Ghost Boy and the picture that he jumps out of right after this on Darkness Radio, News Talk 100.3 FM. Good evening. Welcome back to the show, Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio. Heard here weeknights, Monday through Friday, 11 p.m. till midnight. If you've missed any part of tonight's show or any of our past shows, you'd like to catch up on those, check them out at ktlkfm.com. Click on the podcasts, find Darkness Radio. You can even subscribe so you never miss an episode. They're commercial free, too, when you go to the podcast. It's true, Tim. Commercial free.
Wow.
I'm breaking rules. I'm giving them away free. No commercials.
You can't do that.
I can. Do you know I am?
Who do you think you are?
I'm Paranormal Chief Judge Dave Schrader from Paranormal Challenge on the Travel Channel Friday nights.
Can I get out of a paranormal speeding ticket by appealing to you?
No, not at all.
No.
You're screwed. Right. Our guest this evening, Sherry Mancuso. You can check out her website, Medium Sherry, C-H-E-R-I. That's mediumsherry.com. And John Scrano, they're telling us their story of Charlie, the little boy ghost that resides in a picture in their house that when he's apt to do, he'll just leap out of the picture and begin playing around the house. Now, that, to me, is an amazing story, and it's different than just the haunted articles that we've had around before. Have you talked to him as a psychic? Why is Charlie haunting this picture? And, I mean, it's almost likens back to, like, the old Native American belief that if you take a photograph or so, you're stealing a part of their soul. Here was the sketch of Charlie done by a loved one. That, I mean, there was that kind of bonding that part of the soul is still attached to this picture?
You know, I think what happened was Charlie knows, and because I work with people who have passed over, by the way, pets are also very much a part of our world,
mm-hmm.
in the spirit world as well. I tune into pets. But anyway, with Charlie, he knew that I was concerned about him. I felt a kinship to him. I don't know if we've known each other in prior lifetimes. I don't know. There was something about this picture. There was something about him. And I just felt for him, you know. I felt like he was lonely, and I think because the person, and I wish I had saved the eBay printout. You know, I wish I still had it. But anyway, the man was so concerned about this little boy, and he was so concerned about not leaving him alone in this house. And I was picturing this house; it was damp. There was mildew on it. When I got the picture, the frame, it was like half gone. I mean, you know, it was a leather-bound frame, which in the day was probably very expensive. And it's a big 11 by 14-something type picture. I mean, it's not a little picture. And it was, you know, I just left it. I was going to get it repaired, and I thought, no, I'm not going to. Exactly how it was in that haunted house is exactly how it is in our home. And energy travels. So, you know, when the painting or the picture came from the haunted house, it transferred whatever was in it, whatever was around it, was transferred into our home. And me being a medium, you know, I'm not afraid of this stuff. I mean, I deal with it all the time. To me, I was more concerned about Charlie having a family. And I think what I was tuning into is that probably his family died in the fire, and he may have survived. He may not have survived. I don't know. I never really tuned into it that much, to be honest with you. I just knew that I had to get this picture. And by the way, Dave, John and I are going to send you and email you a picture of the picture. You know,
hold tight now. I don't know if I want to.
Everybody's going to want to know what Charlie looks like now. So, well, you know, maybe we'll make him famous.
Is there any chance he'll jump out of the picture that you're sending me? I've already got seven kids of my own, Sherry. I don't need a ghost one running around.
But there's one more person that had an experience with it. And real quick, it was a client of ours that came from the East Coast and came to work with us, you know, with metaphysical classes and so on and so forth, because John and I teach. And when she was there, she knew nothing. I didn't know her. It was the first time I met her. And she was in our home. She was staying in our home, and we put her in the gold room. And she wanted me to work with her on her mediumship. So what I did was John and I put her up in this room, in the gold room, and lo and behold, the next day, I said, how did you sleep? And she said, well, I didn't. And I said, why? What happened? And she said, Sherry, I don't want to say anything, but she said, that room's haunted. I said, really? I said, what makes you say that? And she says, you know that picture? I go, what picture? There's many pictures up there. She said, there's only one that is kind of eerie. And I said, which one is that? She said, the little boy. I said, oh, you mean Charlie? And she said, you know, she said, he was talking to me. And I said, really? I said, in other words, did you hear him in your ear? Did you hear him in your head? Now, to her, she's telling me this experience, and she's there to have me help her with her psychic ability, because she is psychic. She is a medium. I don't work with everybody, but I do work with people who have a true God-given gift. And when after I told her the story, she went, oh, my God. She confirmed everything that John's son and my little nephew, great-nephew, had said and seen. It was like a deja vu, the story of him jumping out of the frame and running around the room. And that's what she said. He was running around the room, and it woke her up. And she said it wasn't just a little run. She said it was thump, 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 thump. So, you know, and even our dog, we have a dog there, a German Shepherd. He will not go up in that room.
Well, does that bother you? I mean, it seems that that
psychic.
Is it?
And John and I do ghost busting.
Is it because they're afraid? I mean, can Charlie be malevolent from time to time, or?
You know, he's a kid, and I'm sure he gets a kick out of being a little mischievous.
Well, there is an addendum to the story that that Sherry just told about the client in the room.
Uh-huh.
After the woman left, we talk to Charlie all the time, and when we go up into the room, hi Charlie, how are you doing? We just kind of feel that's what needs to be done. And I went up after she had left, and I went in. I went, Charlie, you know, that really wasn't nice. You frightened that woman. You know, I have talked to Charlie about this before. And I said, you know, that really wasn't, you know, behave yourself, Charlie. And I went to turn around, and this is probably going to make me sound like a real nutball, but as God is my witness, Charlie shot a spitball at me.
Oh, I remember that, John, when John told me that. The spitball came flying past me. I looked at him, I said, what are you, crazy?
Now the shoe's on the other foot, John. You're being called out.
I know it. I couldn't believe it. I laughed.
The time has skidded by us so quickly here, guys. One quick question I have had from quite a few of the people in the chat room, if you can answer in a minute or so for me here. Your Ghostbusters, you do this stuff. How come you haven't helped Charlie cross over?
Charlie doesn't want to cross over, and Charlie doesn't seem to be in distress.
Right, and not only that, I do help people cross over. Charlie can go back and forth, and this is what people don't understand.
Right.
people can go up into the white light, and they can come back down. Charlie likes being here. He's what we call a land spirit. And, you know, he finds comfort, apparently, in our home. He was very lonely where he was. But even if you help somebody to go through the white light, which we do all the time, they can still come back. People don't realize that that's why we can tune in to people who have, you know, departed, you know, our loved ones. They can go through to the white light, but they can also come back down if we need them. So they're free to come and go as they want, and most people don't realize that.
Well, Sherry and John, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us. Sherry, we'd love to have you come back, and John, and maybe do some readings and tell us some more of the work that you've done in trying to find missing children and serial killers.
Great. That would be a great fun. Thank you for having us.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us, and thank you all for tuning in. Tomorrow night, we're going to be talking about guardian angels, Gaia, the Earth Spirit, and aliens with our guest Tom T. Moore. Then on Thursday, Randy Russell is going to be here talking to us about Southern ghost stories of dogs and cats and other creepy things from around the South. So you're going to want to make sure you're here for us. And then Friday, of course, we've got Supernatural News of the Strange with our own strange supernatural news correspondent, Timmy D., Mally Fox, and me, Dave Schrader. Stay tuned. George Norrie and Coast to Coast is next. And then keep your dial here because wake up in the morning with Davis and Emmer, the best morning show that we have on the station. This is News Talk 100.3 KTLK.